From Harrisburg to Warren, Latrobe to Port Allegheny, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Philadelphia courts have gained a national reputation as a favorable venue for those seeking big financial awards in suits against the pharmaceutical industry. Kurt Schroeder from the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform is here to discuss. Those coping with the effects of cerebral palsy and other debilitating diseases can find help and support at PennCare. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Sean Wilson of PennCare in this week's Community Benefit Spotlight. And we end 2018 with a Lincoln Radio Journal Christmas tradition. I'll have a reading of the biblical account of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Kurt Schroeder from the Coalition for Civil Justice Reform in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf is once again proposing new state regulations that would harm Pennsylvania's ability to compete against other states by inflicting new so-called air pollution regulations that would be dramatically tougher than those put in place by the federal government. The proposed new state regulations would impose stronger limits on pollutants and then also require companies to implement new programs to seek out methane leaks that can accompany gas drilling operations. The federal government is easing such restrictions, but Wolf wants to undo federal policy by imposing stricter state regulations. Compliance with the proposed new rules would increase the cost of energy produced in Pennsylvania and thus make it less competitive in the global marketplace. State Senator Guy Reschenthaler will take his seat in the U.S. House of Representatives shortly after the first of the year. When he does, he will resign the 37th state senatorial district seat, setting the stage for a special election. Candidates for that special election will be selected by their respective political parties. Dr. Bob Solomon, an emergency room physician, has become the first Democrat to announce his candidacy for the seat. On the Republican side, Allegheny County GOP Chairman D. Raja has announced his candidacy, as has Devlin Robinson, a South Hills businessman. The seat is seen as highly competitive. It was held by a Democrat prior to Reschenthaler. The Republican majority in the state Senate was trimmed from 34 of the 50 seats to 29 seats in November's general election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas is known nationwide for giving huge financial awards to those suing businesses, especially those against the pharmaceutical industry. So much so, the court has landed near the top of a nationwide survey of jackpot venues. Here to talk about the scope of the problem and its impact is Kurt Schroeder, who is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kurt, first of all, when we talk about the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform, before we get into specific issues, tell us a little bit about your organization, why it exists, and what it is you're trying to do.
Well, thank you, Loam, and I appreciate the question. Appreciate you having me in to discuss this. The Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform was founded in late 2016. Basically, our purpose is to work for fair laws and fair courts. We want a level playing field for every litigant in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Far too often, the plaintiffs, and particularly the plaintiff's lawyers, the so-called trial lawyers of this state, for far too long, they've dominated public policy in the legislature, and they've also seemed to have had their way in the courts of this Commonwealth. So our organization, the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform, was created to basically create a balance, to find that sweet spot where all litigants, all parties to a civil lawsuit are treated fairly.
As we look into Pennsylvania, and I know there have been some national studies on this issue, Pennsylvania, especially the city of Philadelphia, seems to have a reputation as not being fair. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Philadelphia is particularly problematic. For years, Philadelphia has been on the list of the top 10 or so jurisdictions in the country where it is the least desirable to be sued, where you go into court and you pretty much don't stand a chance if you're a defendant. So there are a couple of reasons for that. Philadelphia is known for what we refer to as litigation tourism. And that is where out-of-state plaintiffs will come to Pennsylvania to file their case, and they'll do anything they can to make sure that that case gets filed in Philadelphia. And it's not so much the plaintiffs themselves, but it's their attorneys. They know that there's the greatest chance of a jackpot verdict to get jackpot justice in the city of Philadelphia than in any other spot in the Commonwealth. So that attracts people to the courts of Philadelphia. In my mind, it's kind of a shame when one of your growing industries is litigation tourism. I don't think too many municipalities want to be known for that, but unfortunately, that's what we have here in Philadelphia. And we also have attorneys and others that get away with all kinds of things in Philadelphia. Over the course of the past year, year and a half, we have contended with one of the workers' compensation firms, major firm in Philadelphia. In fact, their billboards are all over Interstate 95 down in that region. They're a workers' compensation firm, and what would happen was when an injured person would come into their office for legal representation, they would refer them to their network of physicians. The network of physicians would then have their prescriptions for these patients filled at a pharmacy that was owned by the law firm. So you had lawyers and partners in a law firm who were also acting as pharmacists. And you had really set up a big conflict of interest where these attorneys were earning something off the representation of their clients other than what the court would award, the court or the jury would award. And that's an inherent conflict of interest according to the rules of professional conduct. But to make things worse, not only did they have their own pharmacy where they were profiting from, a profit center within their firm, but this pharmacy specialized in making compound medication creams, and they would sell these creams for thousands of dollars a tube. And that impacts the workers' compensation system. Every employer, every business has to absorb that cost, and they see their premiums and see their cost of doing business go up because of this kind of scam, this kind of treachery that has been out there. So that was uncovered, this whole system, by the Philadelphia Inquirer that did really yeoman's work in looking at this issue. And so we worked in 2018 on passing legislation to remedy this. And we managed to get that bill. It was a prescription drug formulary that would have basically weeded out this kind of activity. We managed to get that bill through the Senate first and then the House. However, it didn't survive the governor's veto pen. And number of reasons for that, but let's just say that a political action committee associated with this law firm, that this law firm, as well as the compounding pharmacies, gave massive amounts of cash to. That political action committee was the governor's largest campaign contributor in 2017 towards his reelection. So I think you can see we're dealing with a lot of problematic issues. We're dealing with an ingrained culture in the city of Philadelphia, an ingrained culture in the legal system and those that practice in it that we are shedding light on and talking about so that everyone knows what is going on and what is happening there.
We are talking with Kurt Schroeder, who is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. And Kurt, as you went through what you just explained and you talked about all of the connectiveness between each of those, the law firm, the doctors, the prescriptions, the political action committee, the governor's veto. And of course, all of this, as you mentioned, was exposed by the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mm-hmm. So this is not some right-wing plot against
right, exactly.
It came from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Is all of this legal?
Well, there's
– talk about collusion?
Yeah, there's talk – there's question about whether it's permitted ethically under the attorney rules of professional conduct. I happen to think that the pharmacy ownership violated those rules. But you know what the most disappointing thing about this has been, Loman, and that is the deafening silence of those who are tasked with enforcing attorney ethics in this state. The bar, and I use that term broadly, not necessarily bar association, but the bar of attorneys itself in Philadelphia, the silence has been deafening on this issue. They act like this has never happened or it's business as usual, and in fact, it's not. So I think that Philadelphia really needs to clean up its own house in the litigation industry, and we need to have elected officials who are willing to look at this closely and willing to take it on.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Philadelphia and this litigation industry that is occurring there, Kurt. And interesting, you referenced broadly a report by the American Tort Reform Association consistently finds Philadelphia to be one of the worst venues in the country for this. What is it that makes Philadelphia so bad? Is it the people who are elected judge? Is it the attorneys involved? Why Philadelphia? Because and I'm assuming we don't have as big a problem in other parts of the state. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But
it's not that there aren't problems in other parts of the state, but they're not nearly as pronounced as the problems in the city of Philadelphia or the city of unbrotherly torts, as it is sometimes called by those of us who are critical of it. I think what has happened is just a culture in the legal climate has arisen in that town, where it's almost an anything goes type of mentality, and this is the way we do it, and we're not going to get caught, and if we do, so what? It's just the cost of doing business. So it is driven largely because of the high verdicts that Philadelphia is notorious for their court system providing. It just makes more and more attorneys want to file their case there. It is not conducive to getting a fair shake for litigants who are sued, whether it's individuals, whether it's employers, companies, hospitals, doctors. The first thing any defendant tries to do if they've been sued in the city of Philadelphia is get out. They try to get the suit into any other part of the state but the city of Philadelphia, and that's because of both its reputation and the facts.
As you talk about the fact that this increases workers' comp costs and all sorts of premiums and costs to businesses, a lot of folks are saying, well, I'll just let the businesses pay for it. What does that mean to me? So if I'm Joe Average out there saying, well, this problem doesn't affect me, it really does, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because we all have an interest, a vested interest, in having a healthy, vibrant economy in Pennsylvania. Businesses make decisions about whether to expand and grow jobs in Pennsylvania or whether to move into Pennsylvania in the first place. They make those decisions based on a number of factors, but one of those factors is the litigation climate. They need to know that they're going to get a fair shake. Everyone expects that if they're at fault for, say, an injury or something that happens, that, yes, they'll have to pay and, you know, make a person whole. But they don't necessarily and shouldn't have to be put out of business, run out of town, run out of the state because of an oppressive litigation climate that goes well beyond making a plaintiff whole. It acts punitively towards many of those same employers who drive our economy in this state. So if we want a good, healthy, vibrant economy in this state, if we want the state of Pennsylvania to continue to grow and provide good family-sustaining jobs, we all need to be concerned about what is happening in our court systems.
And what does this, broken down to a household, cost the average household, the average family in Pennsylvania?
It's very interesting. The U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform did a study recently on the cost of the civil litigation or the tort system throughout the United States. And they took a look at all the states and did a look at Pennsylvania in particular as well. And they determined that the cost of litigation in Pennsylvania amounts to over $3,000 per household. So that's basically a tort tax, if you will, a civil justice, a court tax of over $3,000 per household in this state for the costs of running the courts in Pennsylvania and the court system. And you know what, Loman, of that amount, they also found that of the entire amount that it costs to run our court system in Pennsylvania, only about 56% of that amount actually goes to the injured party. The rest of the percentage goes to paying the plaintiff's attorneys. It'll go towards the defense attorneys. It will go towards other costs related to the court systems. It will go towards the cost of insurance and those type of things. But so much of it is eaten up that the injured party that brings suit gets relatively very little of it in comparison to the way it's divided up amongst everyone else.
Again, we have been talking with Kurt Schroeder, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about this issue, more about what the coalition does, where can they go on the web to find that information?
Lowen, I would invite them to visit our website. The Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform can be found at www.paforciviljusticereform.org. Once again, www.paforciviljusticereform.org.
Kurt Schroeder from the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, thank you for being here.
Great to be with you, Lowen. Thank you.
PennCare is one of the many agencies statewide that assist people coping with cerebral palsy and other debilitating diseases. Sean Wilson is Director of Adult Programs and Services at PennCare. He talks with Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation about what services his agency provides. Joe?
Thank you, Lowen, and thank you, Sean, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Sean, if you would share with the listeners a little bit about your organization. Many of them may know you through your former name. So what was that, and what was the inspiration for changing it to Penn Cares?
We used to be known as UCP of South Central PA. We were a local nonprofit in Hanover, Pennsylvania, started in 1968. And we used to serve children with cerebral palsy in particular. And throughout the years, as children became older, and we served them as adults in their own homes and in the community. And that's sort of where we are today. The reason we changed names to Penn Care Support Services is we wanted to be able to serve more people in the South Central Pennsylvania area.
So do you actually serve people with more causes than cerebral palsy, or you just wanted a wider geographic reach?
We do serve more than those people with cerebral palsy. And that was another issue with being under the UCP logo. People were like, just felt they had to have cerebral palsy to be served by us. While they could have that, you don't necessarily need that diagnosis to be served in the community by us.
So would you share with the listening audience a little bit about what cerebral palsy is, and then what are some of the other kinds of issues that you serve?
It's a neuromuscular disease that affects people in different ways, and basically they lose strength. We would help them with their adult daily living skills in the homes. It could be anything from bathing, dressing, hair care, feeding. We can also help with light housekeeping, running errands, assisting them to go to the doctors, that type of thing.
Is cerebral palsy a genetic kind of thing, or is it something that people acquire, and does it continue to get worse and worse until it becomes terminal?
Unfortunately, that's how it progresses. It is a genetic disease, and can't catch it from somebody. You're born with it, unfortunately, and eventually it gets worse and worse until your body functions shut down and can't keep up anymore.
So, Sean, you're the Director of Adult Programs and Services. You get people who are somewhat advanced in the disease. At the point where you get them into your program, what kinds of things are you looking at, and where do you go?
We serve adults with disabilities, 18 to 59, and the elderly. And again, they don't necessarily have to have, the elderly wouldn't have to have a disability. And basically, they would contact us and let us know they would need help in their own home. Sometimes we get contacted through an agency that they may be helping them get help, or a family member. And then there is a process for that.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Sean Wilson, the Director of Adult Programs and Services for Penn Cares, an organization located in central Pennsylvania. But similar services can be found throughout the state of Pennsylvania. The services that you provide for people at the point they become adults are pretty much in-home kinds of services, or do they come to you?
the services we provide are literally in the person's own home. You know, they don't have to come out to our offices. We have several located across Franklin County, York County, Lancaster County. But we go to them and do an intake after they're approved for services, and then find out what hours of care they would need. Some people we care for 24/7. Some people might be 2 hours a day, a couple times a week. It just really depends on your level of independence and how much assistance you need to maintain that level of independence.
So you said that you don't solely serve people who are dealing with the cerebral palsy, that you serve people with other needs. I assume that there are other people with maybe a different diagnosis but have similar kinds of issues that they have to get help with.
Basically what happens, I'll explain the process to apply for services. Somebody may have gone to the doctor and found out they have a disability, or they're elderly and they over 60 and they need some extra help. Basically, everybody has to go through an enrollment broker that the state of Pennsylvania has contracted with. They're called Maximus. And that enrollment broker basically is just a clearinghouse for everybody to make sure that they qualify for the Medicaid and Medicare funds that they're applying for.
Sean, with some experience in working with organizations like yours, I know that when you do the in-home services, much of the therapy comes through the development of companionship, that people really get a spiritual nurturing as your folks would come into the home and engage them in the things that they do daily. Is that your experience as well?
You really build that professional relationship, and I call it a professional friendship. When we hire our caregivers, we sort of gauge them for that, how friendly they are, why are they in this service. And we find there's a lot of fulfillment in just going out to, you know, hang out with that person. Maybe part of their time is spent like doing a crossword puzzle or watching their favorite show and talking about it, or going for a walk and just having some adult companionship, because most of the folks we do serve do live alone, or they've had a spouse that passed away, and this is the only, you know, one of the only human contacts that they might have during the week.
This is very demanding kind of work for staff in all the communities of people with social and educational, cognitive, physical challenges. At the end of the day, Sean, what works for you? How do you know you're making a difference?
When we go out to our participants several times a year, like this time of year is our most fun time because we just call it a holiday visit, just a PR visit, and I might give them a small gift and just see how things are going, and just to see the smile on their face when we come to the door, the stories that we hear from our caregivers, and every now and then we'll get a thank you letter from a participant or a family member, especially after somebody's passed away, you know, how much we really meant to them and their loved one.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Sean Wilson, and Sean is the Director of Adult Programs and Services for an organization called Penn Cares. Sean, if somebody listening to the program would like to contribute money or volunteer or just learn more about you, how can they reach you?
Best way, we typically drive people to our website, and our website is www.penncares.org, and it's PennCares.org. Or you could call our corporate office in Hanover at 717-632-5552.
So if you're listening to this program, there are programs like this program. They're all different in their own way. However, there are programs like this throughout the state of Pennsylvania. And if you have these kinds of needs, reach out and find out who can help you and how you go about doing it. Again, this is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program with my guest, Sean Wilson, the Director of Adult Programs and Services at Penn Cares. Thank you for being a guest on the program, and back to you, Loman.
Thank you, Joe. And now, as the year 2018 draws to a close, we once again reflect back upon that very first Christmas. Now, we know all too often Christmas has become simply the holidays, and the true meaning has been buried beneath hurried shopping and other pressures of the season. So before we close our program for the year, I'd like to take a couple of minutes and read the account of the birth of Jesus Christ as written by the Apostle Luke. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. With this reminder of the true meaning of the Christmas season, our entire Lincoln Radio Journal family, our Capital Watch panelists David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Matt Briette, along with Community Benefit Spotlight host Joe Geiger, Jake Houck, Frank Gamrat, and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Report, and commentator Beth Ann Mumford, join with our production assistant Joe Winters, administrative assistant Carol Henry, and our affiliate relations manager Tyler Henry, in extending to everyone our best wishes for a blessed Christmas, along with our hopes for peace, prosperity, and many blessings in the new year. For Lincoln Radio Journal, I'm Loman Henry. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.